Hey everybody, welcome to the Monday Night Raw review. So much to get to from last night's Monday Night Raw, with six Survivor Series matches being announced, Randy Orton in three programs at once, and the battle for brand supremacy BS continues for the Survivor Series pay-per-view. Let's get it all started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey everyone, welcome to the WWE Podcast, the unofficial version anyway. Tonight, we're covering Monday Night Raw that took place last night from none other than the Amway Center in Orlando, Florida, or as WWE likes to label it, the Thunderdome in WWE, right? So it'll be interesting though, because their contract with the Amway Center runs out at the end of this month, a few days. So I don't know if they have extended that contract or if they've decided to go to another venue. Either way, I'm fine with them staying at the Amway Center. What I don't want them to do is go back to the Performance Center, which is now known as the Capital Wrestling Center, I believe. So if they do anything, I'll take anything other than the Performance Center, which I'm going to call it the Performance Center until my brain disconnects that. I can't handle that, the Capitol Wrestling Center anymore. I mean, we've seen it for, 5 months or more before it actually transitioned to the Amway Center. So I think I don't just speak for myself, but possibly a lot of other fans that are just over that venue. So, okay, well, thank you everyone for joining me. We've got a ton to cover with this Monday Night Raw review because we had six Survivor Series matches announced. Six. That is probably the most I've ever had in a single paper or a single episode of Raw or SmackDown where they announced matches for the upcoming pay-per-view in a single show. So it was crazy. And yes, oh yes, the beloved, the authentic brand rivalry / brand supremacy battle is now underway for 2020. Hallelujah. Can I get an amen? Yep. I didn't expect one, nor would I ask for one either, because this nonsense of brand supremacy, does WWE actually think this helps sell more network subscribers? Does it really make any fan out there? I'm seriously asking somebody, and I'm being very serious about this, though. I really am. If someone out there really enjoys the brand supremacy gimmick for Survivor Series, please leave a voicemail, email me, something. I want to know the reason. I would love to know why, if there are any fans out there that actually enjoy this brand rivalry nonsense, that actually enjoys it, why you do. And it's cool if you do. I'm not belittling you if you do. If you do, you do. That's great. I mean, we all love different things about wrestling. But I really want to know why, because I want to see if there are truly any fans out there that enjoy this, rather than just doing a normal pay-per-view with rivalries that are worth the pay-per-view, rather than just, again, it's flipping the calendar. It's flipping the calendar. Oh, what month is it? Oh, everyone's supposed to care about their brand suddenly. The other 11 months, no one cares about it. And by the way, there's no consequence if you lose. You want to know how there's no consequence? Remember when Shane McMahon got swept by Monday Night Raw a few years ago? What was the consequence of that? Yeah, think about that. The answer is nothing. That is the correct answer. So don't tell me that even in a sweep, there are consequences, because there's not. There never are. It's forgotten the next night on Raw or SmackDown. And we move on to what? TLC, which I believe is the next pay-per-view in December. You know, I didn't mind the traditional 5-on-5, and I don't mind the traditional 5-on-5 elimination match. But when it was actually done that way for Survivor Series, it was because of a story. It was a story that actually made sense, right? Remember Team Bischoff versus Team Austin back in 2004, I want to say. Remember that? Randy Orton was the sole survivor. There are reasons why things happen. It doesn't need to be Raw versus SmackDown. Why, as WWE fans, because we're all WWE fans, would any of us have a vested interest in one brand over the other? 99% of people that watch SmackDown watch Raw and vice versa. There isn't a single person I've ever talked to, ever, in the history of doing this show or otherwise in my life, that has actually said, nah, I'm a Raw guy. Nah, I'm a SmackDown guy. I don't watch the other. Nonsense. There's no such thing. So if there's no such thing as fan interest or fan creation of this rivalry where they want to see this, then what are we doing it for? Why does WWE insist on this marketing that is that's all this is? This is a marketing purposed gimmick. That's all this is that WWE does every single year. And I'm glad NXT's not involved this year. They're kind of their own thing. That's great. It's just Raw and SmackDown. That is, you know, if you're going to do this, at least they're doing it minus NXT. NXT stays in its own bubble and is protected from this nonsense. Because last year, everyone had to drop every rivalry that they were involved in. You know, I could have had somebody kill my mother and I'm in a blood feud with them. But I drop that immediately and go, oh, well, you know, I'm kind of mad that he killed my mom. But damn it, I am so loyal to Raw that I'm just going to stop what I'm doing and we're going to be teammates. And what makes this even worse? And yes, they do. Oh, can this team even survive? They're not a real team. You know, they've had issues in the past. Stop it. You know, and again, what makes it worse is that this has already started. With the men and the women. People are fighting over being captains of their team. Is this flag football in middle school? I mean, I'm being serious. We have grown men and women making hundreds of thousands / millions of dollars. And they're worried about being a team captain that has no inherent value other than just to say I'm a captain of a team. Every year they also do that. They always have... Well, who's the captain of the team? What does that matter? It doesn't matter. You don't get two lives in this match if you're a team captain. You don't get any extra abilities, right? Like, so I don't understand that. It's very childish. It's very childish for me to believe that these grown men and women are supposed to care about whether or not they're the team captain. Like, you see this every year. So you wrap all this together, and it's a crap sandwich. Right? Because you have a pay-per-view that is one of the big four. And I do like Survivor Series. I used to, up until they started this nonsense of a false brand rivalry. So you put a big pay-per-view and you market it like this, where there's a rivalry that doesn't even exist, that the fans don't care about because they're watching all three brands, well, at least all two now, both brands, most fans are watching, that they don't have a allegiance to either one. They watch one, they watch both. And then you stack on top of it, people trying to become team captains, of which there's no value to, none, other than, okay, I'm a captain, what does that give you? Well, I'm just the captain. Great, so you get a big C on your shirt. I don't know. And to top it all off, not only does this rivalry not really exist and is forced just because you turn the calendar to November, you get the announcers telling you this is the one night a year that SmackDown and Raw go head-to-head, which I've already outlined is a whole bunch of garbage. You want to know how that's a whole bunch of garbage? Look at the last few Raws and SmackDowns that have been the hybrid versions of, well, we're wrapping up rivalries and we're having a goodbye to the New Day, and people just show up on Raw or show up on SmackDown, unannounced, no explanations. There have been so many examples. Royal Rumble, by the way, Raw, SmackDown, and NXT are all involved in there, so don't tell me they don't go head-to-head there, because they do. WrestleMania, many crossover brand matches, which is where the only pay-per-view that has crossover matches should take place. That is the only time I would want a crossover match is with that pay-per-view, WrestleMania, because that's the only time it's worthy. Oh, and by the way, this rivalry has zero consequences. None. Oh, is it bragging rights? Oh, okay, well, we brag for like a week, and the fans don't care. And there's nothing afforded to the stars that win. There's nothing on the line other than, ha ha, my brand beat yours. Red's better than blue. That's it. It's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. So get ready, folks, for me to continue to tear this down as WWE tries to build it up and try to sell all of you that we're supposed to care about brands that we don't have an allegiance to and we're supposed to pick a side or care about who wins. I mean, it's preposterous. It's preposterous. So get ready, folks. We got 3 weeks of this coming up. So we're going to get to all of Monday Night Raw. Asuka's nonsense. Boy, has she been completely buried. I shouldn't say buried. Buried's an overused term. She's been really pushed aside lately and relegated to a comedic character as the Raw Women's Champion. So we're going to get to that. But I do have some good stuff to talk about. I mean, I do. Randy Orton is involved in three programs right now, which is pretty insane when you think about it. He's still hanging on to Drew McIntyre, which I think we're all kind of over. The Fiend is a newly introduced foe of Randy Orton. And, of course, we have Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton announced for Survivor Series. That's a match I'm interested in seeing. Yes, it's two heels. I understand that. But to be totally honest with you, I don't care. You know, I'm fine with a heel versus heel match every now and then, just like babyface versus babyface. Because ultimately, I think that's going to be a really good match. I don't know if there'll be a definitive winner. I hope that Roman Reigns goes over, honestly. And that's crazy to say because Randy Orton's been such a good heel, but we'll have to see. I know it's 3 weeks out or so, 3.5. But yeah, anyway, so we got a lot of matches to get through as far as the announcements. You guys probably know what they are, but I want to give you my thoughts on them. And, of course, going through some of the segments of Monday Night Raw. But first, you guys have been giving your voicemails to me, and that's what this time is for. And if you'd like to participate, you have a couple of options. You can call the show, and that number is 518-952-0247. Leave a voicemail for me. Or you can email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So couple of options for you, but let's get to that first one. We do have quite a few tonight. I'll see how many I want to get to. Obviously, I don't want to stack this completely with just voicemails. And let me know what you guys think about this voicemail segment. I haven't got a whole lot of feedback, whether you like hearing the voices, whether I'm doing too much voicemail. Let me know what you think. I want to make sure you guys are getting what you want from this show, because I always have like so many voicemails, and I don't want to completely load it with voicemails and talk about Raw for 10 minutes. I don't think that's fair because of the, you know, that's not what this show or this particular episode is about. So let me know what you think. I want to make sure that you guys, again, enjoy the show. And that's what it's for, you and therapeutic for me. So, okay, first voicemail. Here we go.
Hello, Matt. How are you? This is Sharon from Israel. First of all, I will be very happy if you can do a program about the best entrance songs of all time. Nowadays, there is not a lot of much of the entrance songs to the wrestlers, and I will be happy if you can do a show about the entrance songs like John Cena, The Undertaker, although he didn't have an entrance song, Triple H, and etc. Thank you. This is subject number one. Subject number two is about the Raw Women's Championship and about the bad things that the WWE is doing to Asuka. They are treating her really like a kind of B champion. In Hell in a Cell, we had The Miz versus Otis, and we didn't have a championship match for Asuka. This is so stupid. Also, they give her such a lame opponents like Lana, like Zelina Vega. Yes, Zelina Vega can be good, but now in the match that they had, it was such a bad match. I think that that Asuka can be a really great champion, but how the WWE is treating her is really, really bad. They're taking the women's evolution a few steps back, and it really makes me not happy to see what they are doing to the character as well, when she's speaking gibberish. And I mean, I guess that she can speak good English and she can do promos or give her a manager like Paige was her manager. Yeah. Yeah, so that's it, Matt. Hell in a Cell was a good show, and I wait to that you will speak about it in your show. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Sharon, thank you for calling in. It's been a while since we've heard from you. Good to hear from you. And so first suggestion you had about doing entrance music, the best entrance music of all time, that is a good idea. You know, I haven't really dove into just music. I don't think nostalgia, my wrestling nostalgia shows, which tomorrow another one will drop, and I can tell you of what I will be doing already, and that is Undertaker versus Randy Orton, the rivalry that they had over the last, well, they had it for about a year, from 2004 to 2005. So that is something I'll be covering, and it's a fan request. This is not just something I'm pulling out of the hat. I do bank these things, and I will bank this one. That's a good idea. And Randy Orton, Undertaker. And the reason I'm also doing that is because if you haven't already seen it, it's WWE Untold. The rivalry between Randy Orton and Undertaker was one of the featured ones, or ones that they just came out with, and I watched it, and it kind of inspired me also, on top of fans asking for it, or listeners, I should say. Or maybe I'll call you the WWE Podcast Universe. Oh my God. It made myself kind of want to vomit right there. But that is tomorrow's show. And thank you so much for the suggestion. Asuka, yeah, where the hell was she? It seems as if Asuka's being relegated to a comedy role, at least perceived comedy. And I don't know what they're doing. It's kind of as if she's in a holding pattern for Charlotte to return. I believe that's the thought. And Charlotte is on Raw. She got drafted to Raw. You would think that upon her return could be a month or more. She's been thought to come back as late as the Royal Rumble as an entrant. But maybe that's what they're doing. She's just kind of in these meaningless programs of just dominating her opponent and retaining. The Raw Women's Championship is kind of a forgotten thing on Raw, and I hate to say that, but Asuka's a really, really good wrestler. Not performer. She's not a magician. She's a wrestler. So that is something that I've noticed too, and I don't know. I really don't know what they're doing other than keeping her in a holding pattern for someone to debut, someone to come up from NXT. I don't know. But what I don't like from Asuka, as you said, number one, she wasn't in Hell in a Cell. Number two, this past Monday night, and I guess I'll incorporate some of my Raw review. I guess that's only fair. But what happened with her on Raw, coming in between the faux Street Profits that were really just dressed up as New Day. Well, actually, New Day dressed up as the Street Profits. And then we had the Hurt Business come up to New Day, who were just dressed as the Street Profits. And Asuka comes in between New Day and starts talking about we want the smoke and dancing. And this is Asuka at her worst, at least how she's being utilized. You can't use Asuka in a worse way. And I have said in the past that Asuka was charmingly endearing or charmingly annoying, where I kind of found her annoying but entertaining at the same time. Now, what they're doing with her and what they've done for so long now, when I say long, I mean like a few weeks, but it's not okay what they're doing with the Raw Women's Champion, is booking her in forced comedy segments where she comes in, she's supposed to be talking to these people, she's supposed to be talking to the Hurt Business, talking to the New Day, and she's standing in like a row. She's standing in like single file line so that she faces the camera perfectly. I'm like, if you're talking to somebody, I don't, look off to the side. Like, I speak to that person. That's just kind of a production sin that WWE's had forever, that everyone's perfectly lined up so everyone can get in the camera shot, and they're not talking naturally. They have to be standing at like an angle that's way too much for the camera to, or for it to be a believable conversation where they put production over reality. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm trying to describe it the best I possibly can. If you've seen any episode of Raw, SmackDown, whatever, everyone's always in the line, right? Like, no one's talking naturally face to face. So, but yes, Asuka is not being utilized well at all. I didn't find her funny. I found it annoying. She's dragging down the Raw Women's Championship right now, which to me should be a focal point for the women, and it's not. And yes, I know Survivor Series is coming, and yes, I know that Asuka is going to be facing Sasha Banks at Survivor Series. And how much do you want to bet that since the draft took place just a couple weeks ago, you're going to have SmackDown stars on Raw and Raw stars on SmackDown with no explanation other than, well, they have to build to the pay-per-view. They were invited here. They were invited to Raw. They were invited to SmackDown. Out the window goes the wild card rule. Out the window goes the quarterly invitational. Out the window goes the draft rules at all. I mean, and what makes this Survivor Series, the whole setup even worse and less anticipating of even if you were mildly interested in the brand thing, this draft just happened. So if a draft just happened, the stars that are facing one another on the opposing teams have probably already worked together in the last month. They haven't had time to just be on their own on Raw or own on SmackDown, build their own feel, their own gimmick, their own presence. And instead, we're treated to probably the same matchups we've seen again over the last month or two. If this happened at the end of the draft cycle, that would be more impactful than, again, at the very beginning. The draft just happened a few weeks ago. See where I'm getting at? But yeah, Asuka is just back to focus here. I don't know what in the hell they're doing, but I found her segment annoying. I found it obnoxious. I do not find her funny anymore. They have completely taken her to a depth that is starting to hurt her as a babyface and hurt the championship more importantly. So those are my thoughts on that. Okay, I'm incorporating a little bit of the Raw review into these voicemails because I give long answers and I tie them into Raw. So, okay, next voicemail.
Hey, Matt, this is Jeff again from the Philippines, and it feels like 2010 again now that Randy Orton is the WWE champion and The Miz is Mr. Money in the Bank. That was the year that I actually started watching wrestling on a regular basis, so I'm having nostalgic vibes here. And on Tucker turning on Otis, I don't know why, but I kind of feel sorry for Otis when I saw the expression on his face when Tucker hit him with the briefcase. And I hope after that Otis becomes a serious character. No more dancing, no more lunchbox, no more him. Because he already lost everything. He lost his tag team partner, he lost his girlfriend, he lost his money in the bank. So there's nothing to be do something funny about. And on the Roman versus Jey Uso Hell in a Cell match, I love the drama on that match. And I think maybe we could get a Jey versus Jimmy rivalry soon, like when they start to follow Roman's order, then their relationship would go sour and Jey would start blaming Jimmy and say something like, because of you I lost my shot at the Universal Championship, because of you I'm not the provider, because of you I cannot be the head of the table, and because of you I had to say I quit, because you keep sticking your nose in my business. Something like that, Matt. What do you think? And thank you.
Hey, Jeff. So thanks all the way from the Philippines. It still blows my mind every time you say that. It seems like I got an international vibe going on tonight. Israel, I got the Philippines. We'll have to see who's next. But so first of all, yeah, it does kind of feel like 2010. And if you got into wrestling back then, it's very striking of some of the similarities from 2010. But yeah, so what I'm thinking about Otis is, number one, yes, he needs to get away from the gyrating, just like Big E does. For whatever reason, Vince McMahon has this obsession sometimes, or this just lock on making sure that there's somebody who's a comedy character that he can latch on to and make sure that they are a comedy character every single show. And Otis seems to be that guy. I'm not a fan of what they've done with Otis. You guys have know this. I'm not going to rant on it again. You know how I feel about Otis and what they've done. And I don't think what they're going to do is stop it right now, especially again with Thanksgiving coming up. do you really think Vince is going to be able to hold back on the temptation to have Otis sitting in like an in catering with gravy all over him or mashed potatoes running down his stomach? There's going to be something ridiculously bad that they do as an attempted comedy for Otis coming up with Thanksgiving. So I don't think it's going to happen that quickly. If it does, I'll be shocked. I'll be elated. But I'm hesitant to think that that's a possibility in the immediate future, just because I think Vince feels like he is the one that sees what we don't. I forget who it was. There was an interview recently done with an outgoing star, and they noted, it might have been Jack Hager. I can't remember, but I'll look it up. It's on one of the news websites that we all look at. And Vince McMahon, or the person that left, said that, you know, you're not really performing for the fans. You're performing for an audience of one, and that is Vince McMahon. The people there are just trying to make sure that they don't lose their job. They're doing enough to impress Vince and not worried about the fans. Well, there's no fans in attendance, so I can understand that. But before the pandemic happened, and even when the pandemic finally ends and we can go back to our normal lives of just not worrying about how close we are to one another and sporting events come back, I now see what that means, because there's a lot of wrestlers out there who I do believe, and it's been confirmed, that they wrestle for Vince, that they perform for Vince. And I can see that. That has been confirmed by a lot of people outgoing. Dean Ambrose. John Moxley, as he is now known, and others, CM Punk, right? I mean, there's been a lot of other people that have confirmed this, Luke Harper. And I just think it's a shame. But I don't think Otis is going anywhere anytime soon with his comedy character. I think it'll probably get him impressed more. Maybe he'll get a little serious, and then he'll start doing the gyrating and all the terribleness that goes with it. So, okay, let's get to the next voicemail and see who it is.
Hey, Matt, it's Brad from Pennsylvania. I think it's actually really cool that you wanted to know what I think about the pay-per-view last night. So here we go real quick. There's some good and some bad. I thought the Roman fight was awesome. What they're doing with him is great. I mean, he even had me fooled at the end of the fight when he started crying. I was like, oh, here we go. They're turning him face again already. And then he grabbed him, put him in the guillotine. So that whole fight was awesome. The slow pace, the in-ring talking. I mean, it was all great. That whole feud has to do a lot for Uso's career, in my opinion, because he's been great through it too. We'll be exciting to see where they go with that. I do smell a little Goldberg one-off coming soon. We all know that's going to happen, but otherwise, that was awesome. I did think it was a little bit of a surprise that Orton did beat McIntyre, because I thought with the way they drafted, I saw a lot of feuds coming for Drew for the belt, maybe with AJ, maybe with The Fiend. Just a thought, but I could definitely get with Randy being the champ now, because he deserves it. He was on a hell of a run. I enjoyed the Bayley-Sasha match. I did think it was a little weapon heavy, but you know, for Hell in a Cell, I guess that comes with the territory, so that was cool. One thing I didn't like, though, Bobby Lashley fighting a Retribution member, which is fine, but why did they have to pick Slapnuts to be the guy that he fought? Bobby Lashley's a monster. They should have sent one of the two monsters that are in Retribution to do the fight. But other than that, I thought the pay-per-view was pretty good. I'd give it like a 7.5 out of 10. But, you know, I can't wait to hear what you thought of it. I only listened to maybe the first 5 minutes of your review, because I had to take my daughter to school and stuff like that. So I'm going to listen to it actually now. So take care, Matt. Have a good one.
Hey, Brad. Awesome. Thank you for calling back. I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed the pay-per-view as a whole, right? Like, if you give it a 7.5 out of 10, that's pretty good. I mean, that's pretty good in the fandom of WWE, where it's just impossible to please us wrestling fans. That's good. And I would concur. I would actually give it a slightly higher review of 8 out of 10. So we're right in the same ballpark. I know that the botch guy, who you, if you've listened to the show already, I'm guessing you have, because now you're on the Raw review. He gave it he thought it was the best pay-per-view of the year. I wouldn't go that far. And I told him I probably wouldn't go that far, but it was in my top 3, top 4 of the year so far. So definitely, and it sounds like you bought into the Roman Reigns crying. I did for a few moments that he could just pull out the tears like that, but I don't think that would have been the best choice, because they're sinking into something really, really good with Roman Reigns. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, WWE is probably looking at Vince going, hey Vince, you see what all the fans were talking about, or a lot of fans were talking about, and what we wanted to do for 6 years? Yeah, this is what you've been missing. And Vince is probably like, oh, well, he wouldn't have been able to have the maturity to be what he is and how good he is as a heel if he hadn't gone through the babyface. I would argue the opposite. You have to know how, you have to have the fans hate you and learn how to take the hate before you can understand what makes them cheer. I would argue the complete opposite. So, but nonetheless, I'm glad you enjoyed the pay-per-view as a whole. I think many fans did it too. I think as a whole that it was well received, but, okay. Well, let's get to one more voicemail. I know I have more, but I'll get to one more voicemail, and then I do want to dive in deeper to Monday Night Raw, and we'll go from there.
Oh, hey, Matt, it's Devin from Australia again. You try really hard. I'll just let you know that my name is Devin. So my first bit of my name is B for Bravo, but still, I don't feel bad because, when I speak to people on the phone here in Australia, some people think I'm Karen. So I'm still giving you a solid 9 out of 10. So don't feel bad, dude. All good, all good. About Hell in a Cell, I just thought more of a comment about the Money in the Bank match. I just seen Tucker turn heel, fine, you know, makes sense. Sometimes tag partners feud in the end. However, with Otis being on SmackDown, he's only other character is El Gran Gordo on Raw. So we're basically going to have a feud between Tucker and Peppa Pig, because that's all I see when I see El Gran Gordo is Peppa Pig. So I'm sure Vince would find that funny though, wouldn't he? anyway, just a comment on that. And the other thing I thought of was listening to you and the Botch Guy talk about where to for Roman Reigns in the long term, and, you know, with the potential storyline of him running into The Rock. I'm happy to be proven wrong. I'm just sometimes not sure how I feel about returning legends coming back for a story. I love The Rock. I love his promos. He was the guy. He was my favorite back then. I'm just not sure, you know, once he takes on Roman, I'm assuming it would be for the championship long term or long, down the road. But where to would he go from there once he'd, I mean, you would think that he would defeat Roman. I just wonder what would there be for The Rock after that. But, happy to be proven wrong. And, again, thanks for the great show, mate. And, take care. Bye.
All right, Bevan. So I got a B for Bravo. That if you didn't say that, I would have actually still not known. So awesome. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Now we've got Australia. We've got Pennsylvania, Israel, and the Philippines. Man, we are world traveling tonight. So I got to be honest, that made me laugh when you said Otis is Peppa Pig. I mean, that's actually really funny. And it unfortunately would make Vince laugh. Do not give him that idea, although maybe I just did if somebody from the company is somehow listening to this and creative brings it to his attention. So we could have just shot ourselves in the foot. Nonetheless, it is a kind of a funny reference, one of which I've never heard. But to get to your thoughts about The Rock possibly facing Roman Reigns, of which the Botch Guy and I talked about, and you mentioned, well, what's next? What would be that next for The Rock? Well, I think that shouldn't be the question. The question should be, what's next for Roman Reigns? I wouldn't really care what The Rock does next, because he's not coming back here full time or even part time. He is back once in a blue moon at this point. So I wouldn't care what's next for The Rock. The Rock, if he comes in, should be focused on building the star that he's working with. And in this case, if it's Roman Reigns, he should continue to build Roman Reigns. That is his purpose. He's in the giving back stage of his career, of his life. He's built himself an empire. He's the highest paid actor in Hollywood. He's one of the most successful pro wrestlers of all time. It should not be about him. It should be about Roman Reigns. He should come in, do the job for Reigns, and leave. Maybe have a couple of matches. If you want to string it to a series, fine, have a rocket of victory. But ultimately, Roman Reigns gets the victory, or wins the war, and The Rock wins a couple of battles and puts over Reigns. So I think you might be asking the wrong question. It's about what's next for Roman Reigns. Not about The Rock. The Rock can go and do whatever he can wants to do because he's at that point in his life. He can go and just make a couple million here in a movie, a couple million there, pop into wrestling and leave. So that's my answer. So, okay, let's get a little bit more to Monday Night Raw. I know I have a couple more voicemails. If you sent them in, I do apologize, but I do want to get to Monday Night Raw, and I will save them for tomorrow night's show. So continue to send in the voicemails. But here's some other things from Monday Night Raw. The biggest thing, let's just get to it. At least in most people's eyes, I think. The ending with The Fiend and with Randy Orton and with Drew McIntyre. So Randy Orton's really got three irons, so to speak, in the fire. He is going to be facing Roman Reigns at Survivor Series because that's just what happens. It's champion versus champion. He's now got The Fiend on his tail because of Alexa Bliss in the Firefly Funhouse. And how he burned down the house of Sister Abigail. I mean, they brought audio back from that SmackDown segment a few years ago. And I love the way on Talking with Bliss, or A Moment of Bliss, rather, where she said that you and Drew burned the house down at Hell in a Cell. That was really clever. That was great. Because that is a perfect pun into what the reasoning is for The Fiend potentially being angry or trying to move on to Roman. Randy Orton has his next target. So we had Randy Orton said, "No, I'm good." He didn't want to sit down. He knew The Fiend was there. Alexa was just laughing the whole time. He gets Drew McIntyre coming out. And that's where it kind of broke down for me. Because I'll be honest, like, After three matches, you know, it's been a couple of months. I'm moving on to the next feud. Like, I'm ready to just kind of move on. That's just the natural progression of what we were used to as fans, and I think what our attention spans are for programs. And having Drew come out was actually kind of a downer. Did anybody else feel that way? When Drew comes out, it's like, And yes, he said that he'd stick around for the Moment of Bliss, and he's going to have his own moment, but it won't be Bliss or something like that. And I'm like, no, can we move on? I know that Randy's holding the championship. I understand that. And there are fans out there who legitimately are angry that Drew dropped the belt. But I would tell those fans, in today's world, you can't tell me that 6.5 months is not a long time to hold a championship. That's a long time. It's a long time. And I think it was a successful run, a really successful run for Drew. That was a perfect fit. He felt the part. He looked the part. He was the part. Because he was authentically a champion. So I would calm down those fans that are angry about him dropping the belt to Randy. But, it's a bit confusing. And I'm over the whole program right now. I'm okay with Drew moving on to a new opponent. It's fine. But we didn't get that. We just got another brawl. And, yes, I know Drew made the promise. Anytime Randy Orton's in the same building as me, I'm going to whoop his ass. I'm going to kick his ass. Like, okay. Okay, well, eventually that has to not happen because we don't want you battling Randy Orton for the rest of your career, okay? So I understand the promise. I have no problem with it, but eventually, please, move on. And I'm kind of starting to feel that way. It was actually the first time I heard Drew McIntyre's music where I go, Like, I actually kind of groaned to myself. But nonetheless, we got them brawling. Alexa Bliss sitting up on the top rope kind of laughing, which was interesting and intriguing to me. And then The Fiend's music hit. And, God, his entrance is, it's just so good. I mean, I gotta still say his entrance is great with the lights turning off and the kind of the, like that kind of everything being brought down, the darkness descends. It's a great, really a great way to introduce a talent. But The Fiend, as Randy Orton was walking up the ramp, because we got the lights coming back on and Randy Orton was already up the ramp. And Randy Orton knew The Fiend was behind him. And The Fiend just stood there. He just stood there. And Drew and Randy continued to pummel one another. And Randy Orton made the decision between Drew, who was coming up one side, and The Fiend, who was behind him, to make the choice to go after Drew McIntyre rather than deal with The Fiend. And they brawled and brawled, and that's how Raw ended, where The Fiend just did nothing. I don't know why. Why? Like, why even bring The Fiend out? The Fiend should, again, I'm a proponent of less is more, and I don't need to see The Fiend every week. I know maybe USA does, or when he was on Fox, I know Fox wanted him on more because he draws ratings. He does, but he didn't do anything. I mean, he didn't attack Randy at all, and I don't know. I just was left a little bit disappointed that nothing happened. It was very kind of weird, but Randy Orton and Drew apparently are not over, and now he's got Roman Reigns breathing down his neck at Survivor Series. So Randy certainly, as I said, got a lot of irons in the fire, so to speak. So let me know what you guys think about the main event here of Monday Night Raw. That was the moment of bliss, and boy, oh boy, is Alexa Bliss kicking ass right now. Alexa Bliss is doing some of the best work of her career. I don't know what the payoff is when she'll be unmesmerized and snap out of it. I don't know. But right now, what she's doing is working, and it is making her infinitely more relevant than when she was with Nikki Cross, you know, playing high school girls on a talk show. I mean, it's so much better. So much better. Okay. Moving on to something else on Monday Night Raw. AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy. You know that's going to be a good match right off the bat. This is a qualifier to become a part of the Raw team, the traditional 5-on-5 team. I like how there's qualifiers. That makes total sense to me. It makes sense that you would have people qualified to be on the team, so that was good. AJ Styles also finally mentioned Jordan O. Omegman. Boy, as I said last week, Jordan O is what I'm going to call him. He mentioned him as his associate and that he doesn't like to be talked to or looked at. That's funny. I mean, at least he acknowledged him. He gave him a name of sorts, or at least a relationship cue that he's his associate. So we'll have to see what that means. I'm okay with the slow burn on this. Maybe they don't know. I have a clue. I have a good hunch that they don't know, because the company has done a lot of I don't know storylines for a long time over the last, I don't know how many months, right? The hacker. That's a, I don't know, let's just do it. No, I don't know the payoff. And yeah, Mustafa Ali is a convenient out, but it wasn't designed that way. We have Retribution, which is slowly fading into oblivion. We have Raw Underground, which came and went. And, I mean, several other things. It's just one of those things that I don't know if they know where they're going. I don't have confidence that they know where they're going with AJ Styles' associate. But I'm okay. I'm fine with it for right now. He's not saying a whole lot, but my God, the size difference is just hilarious. I mean, AJ Styles is about my height, so I could imagine standing next to this monster. Okay, but the match, I mean, it was good. It was exactly what you'd expect from a Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles match. Two professionals in the ring doing what they do best. And that's exactly what we got, with AJ Styles going over as he should. Jeff Hardy's been on a downward spiral for quite some time now. Ever since losing the Intercontinental Championship, it has been a downward spiral for Jeff Hardy. And he seems to be kind of that legacy enhancement talent. Is that a thing? Can you be a legacy enhancement talent? Well, that's what Jeff Hardy is. At least he's created that new category anyway. So AJ Styles won. That was the right call. That was the right call. AJ Styles is hopefully on the ascent here from his... he also had a pretty bad downward spiral on SmackDown. So, okay, we got Akira Tozawa, Drew Gulak versus the Lucha House Party. I mean, do I even need to really comment on that? Lince Dorado pinned Drew Gulak to win the match, but R-Truth escaped. Okay, yeah, well, I'm moving on from that. I don't want to be negative. Firefly Funhouse. I do want to talk about this. And not because Alexa Bliss was on the show. She was on last week. I know that. She came out again. She's really good. I love this duet here of Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss. It is working and working very well. The chemistry is there. I think Alexa's starting to really understand her character. I don't think she's ever had to be really evil. I like the contacts in the eyes of the blue contacts in Bray Wyatt's eyes, and then the red contacts that Alexa Bliss used when she said, "Let him in." I mean, I love it. She's doing great work with him. This is wonderful stuff. But what is the most impressive to me, or what's the most notable, I should say, because yes, Alexa's doing great. What's most notable? What was in Bray Wyatt's hat? Anybody else catch that? I mean, I don't know how you didn't, unless he just kind of breezed over it. The numbers 19 and 11. Now, he has them kind of reversed. I would have put 11 on the top and 19 on the bottom as we read it, 11-19. But what this signifies is Undertaker's debut date of November 19th. And I have said this. I've said it before. I've said it for, like, I feel like over a year. But this is the second time that Bray Wyatt now has confirmed that 11/19 date. Undertaker's debut. And what are we celebrating in just a few weeks? The 30th anniversary of the debut of The Undertaker. Yeah, it doesn't fall on 11/19. We know that. It falls on, I think, the 22nd of November. So the stars didn't align perfectly for it to also fall on a Sunday for November 19th this year. But I think it's now really something that is confirmed. I think it's undeniable at this point that 11/19 is significant to Bray Wyatt. He has signified or told us about this for many, many months, up to a year now. And it's time to acknowledge the fact that this is going to happen. There will be some interaction with Bray Wyatt and Undertaker at Survivor Series. I could almost bank on that. Like, actually put money. I won't. I'm not advising anyone else does. And there are ways you can do it, of course. But I would not advise it. But this is something undeniable, I think, at this point, of Bray Wyatt and Undertaker interacting. Why else? What other significance of the numbers 19 and 11 is there for Bray Wyatt? Somebody tell me. Because I don't think there is one. So I think that's exactly what this is. And that's what I took away from it. I said, here we go. So that's the one thing I did take away. And I really believe it's going to happen. And I think it will be Undertaker's final match. And he will announce it as such. So, okay. The women's team. My boy. The women's tag team champions. Well, first this. Adam Pearce. And I'm sighing because this is... It wasn't my favorite thing, the way that this happened, but Adam Pearce, who came out, and he was with somebody else, I can't remember the name of the official, came out and announced who was going to be on the SmackDown, or on the women's side of the Raw team, because the men and women are both having 5-on-5 traditional elimination matches. Great, fine. But the problem I have with this is, number one, the women didn't have to qualify. They just are announced. There's no qualification whatsoever. They can't do that? Why? And yes, we had the final person have to, quote, qualify, which ended up being Lana. And I would watch her in 2021. She just signed a 5-year deal with WWE. And rumor has it, again, rumors, for whatever those are worth, that WWE is looking for her to be a huge star. And, I mean, I believe that. She's certainly got the look. Her in-ring is improving. I'll say that. She's improving inside the ring, which is all you can ask for. But she's getting victories that are not... they're not helping the fans gain respect for her. They're helping fans dislike her even more. And I don't mean in a way that makes her a good heel necessarily. Fans may look at that as kind of a scapegoat for her lack of ability to have a really good match and just kind of coming out there and being at the right place at the right time, taking advantage of someone else's finisher being hit and getting the victory, which is what she's done. So it's what she did here in the Fatal 4-Way with the women on Raw. And Nia Jax ended up putting her through a table again for, what, the 6th time or something like that, something crazy. So Lana ends up, quote, earning the victory here. Fine, whatever. So we have the women here on SmackDown. All of them have been announced now. And is it because there's not enough of a depth in the women's division that they couldn't have qualifying matches? I thought about that, and I'm like, maybe that's part of the reason. At the same time, you can't tell me, though, if there are 5 qualifying matches, right? Because there are 5 spots, which means if you have 5 matches, you get 5 slots. You can't tell me WWE doesn't have 10 women available. That would probably be the entire Raw women's roster to qualify for this match. Instead, they're just kind of picked. I think, maybe it was a way to hide the exposure of the fact that they don't have a lot of depth on the women's roster, I guess, which is also... funny. I mean, I don't know if it's funny, but it's also really noticeable when you have the women's tag team champions never defending their belts because there's barely any tag teams for the women's roster as a whole on Raw or SmackDown. So it's like, you know, they have like 3 teams, right? So you have Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax, who will probably hold them for the rest of their lives because there's no team that can really, number one, that are even positioned to take these two out. And there's not that many tag teams anyway. I mean, like, think about it. Like, what's another women's tag team that's on Raw or SmackDown? Just name another team, much less one that actually is believable to take these two out. It's not good for the women's tag team, but those are essentially props that Shayna and Nia Jax are holding. They are simply props. Until WWE gets serious about their women's division, they're props. Sorry, they are. No, I'm not sorry, because I stand by what I say. So, okay, Elias versus Keith Lee. Well, you knew Keith Lee isn't losing this. I mean, Keith Lee's not going to lose to Elias right now. Keith Lee is clearly positioned in a way that is hey, guys, this is a future main eventer. Take him seriously. And Elias is kind of the guy that, I mean, I don't know what to think of Elias. And I said this on my review show with the Botch guy. I really don't know what to think of him. Fish or foul? I mean, I'm kind of over the I'm a musician and you should all pay attention to me gimmick. And he just needs a refresh. I'm not saying a completely new gimmick and change him 180. But for him to go around, for how many years he's been here now, I think a couple of years, and he just has the same routine of running down the city. I know you can't run down the city right now because they're not traveling, but running down the fans in the ring. You're a wannabe musician that, yeah, he had a real album that reached number one in the Apple Music charts. Congratulations. That's great. And he's legitimately a decent musician. But for him to consistently put that out there as his wrestling persona, and it's the same routine. He's constantly carrying a guitar. He comes out. He has the ring announcer say, "Ladies and gentlemen, Elias." I actually, when I heard that, I go, it's because you know exactly what you're going to get. It may be a kind of a funny line or two here or there, but it's ultimately going to end up with him being interrupted and somebody coming out and him getting frustrated and then him trying to use his guitar as a weapon. I mean, don't you wonder what Elias's budget is for guitars? Guitars aren't cheap. I mean, the ones that they use are, they just kind of explode on impact. They're like balsa wood or something. But to be honest, I mean, like, how many guitars is this guy's a true musician? Is he purchasing knowing that he's going to either have it used on him or he's going to use it to smash his opponent? I mean, it's just, I know I'm getting into the weeds here, but the Elias character needs something different other than just this musician that walks around with a guitar and is surprised when somebody interrupts him. Of which, I mean, it's happened legitimately every single time he's done his, quote, concerts before a match. We all know what WWE stands for. There's one universal truth. I mean, I guess I'm a little bit bored by the Elias character. You know, you're hoping when a star takes 4 months off like Elias did, that they have something for him to kind of juice him up a little. I don't mean that in a steroid way, okay? Probably a bad choice of words. I mean that in a way that is like progressive. Do something new with your character. Get, you know, do something different. Tweak it. Music, attire, I don't know, finish, something. And instead, it's the same Elias that comes back. They did that with Dean Ambrose. Same Dean Ambrose that came back. That was one of the things Dean Ambrose said on the podcast with Jericho. He was hoping and think of all these ideas, what they could do when he returns, and they just slotted him right back in the same place. What did they do with John Morrison? Took how many years off WWE? They slotted him right back into the Miz and Morrison tag team. They don't ever seemingly either take the time and effort to think about something they could do differently, or B, they play it safe and they just slide him back where they knew it worked the last time, which is the kiss of death in the whole comfort zone analogy. So, I don't know. I'm going on a bit of a rant there, but I'm not a fan. Keith Lee, I mean, we all know what he's going to be. Big star. We all know. I'm not a fan of the way he delivers his promos. I find it actually kind of annoying. It's almost like he's trying to talk different just to be different. At first, it's intriguing because he talks so much differently than most people do, whether in promos or in real life, and you want to listen to his words. But I don't know. I find it almost just, again, like he's trying too hard to be different in speaking. Instead of just him giving his natural voice, he's just talking in a way that he knows is different. So it's different, but it's not authentic, if that makes sense. All right. I'm kind of going off track here. Oh, boy. Okay. Retribution versus the Hurt Business in an elimination match. So MVP cut a promo prior to the match saying that when they're through with the match, they'll have to rid WWE of Retribution and they'll earn their payment. So the match starts out pretty strong. The Hurt Business seem to have the advantage, and Reckoning gets on the apron and she starts twitching, seeming to have a fit, which distracts MVP and allows Slapjack to roll him up for a pin as Reckoning continues to squirm. And I'm reading that verbatim from a website, but I wanted to make sure I didn't miss the details here. The match then goes on as the next elimination is Slapjack. I don't want to go through all the eliminations here, but essentially it came down to the Hurt Business getting a victory after Ali hit Cedric with a chair, which caused a DQ, earning a win for the Hurt Business. And then Ali is run off by the rest of the Hurt Business. Get rid of Retribution, please. I don't even know why a heel team is facing this heel faction. And I feel bad for Ali because there was something there. If they end up completely shooting this dead, I will feel bad for Ali. I mean, that's the only person I'll feel bad for because he has something there to show. I mean, he can maybe form his own group. He's not going to be the one who's banned, so to speak, or banished from WWE. But I just hope that Ali, even if this whole thing flops, does get a second opportunity to form his own group and stay a heel. There's really something there. Okay. Drew McIntyre versus The Miz. Again, Drew McIntyre should win, and he did. And he hit hit the Claymore on Miz. And yeah, at the beginning of the show, we had The Miz and Morrison come in and kind of backhand compliment Drew McIntyre. McIntyre warns them. Of course, they don't listen. And McIntyre takes them both out. I mean, I'm really trying not to be too negative here, guys. I mean, Drew McIntyre love. Okay, let's be honest. I think that calling John Morrison Johnny Drip Drip is very sophomoric. I don't think he does anything to his character. Corey Graves seems to drive that nickname home, and I don't think that it really helps legitimize him. And I don't know his reasoning behind doing that or calling him that constantly. But The Miz is a guy that I am just. You talk about repackaging, right? You talk about needing time off. The Miz has been the same guy for 10 years. And I don't know about you, but I still look at him as kind of that guy that came from reality TV, the real world. I know it's been forever. I get it. But for whatever reason, it has not washed away from him. I cannot look at him and take him seriously. And I'm not saying, oh, he's got great heel heat. I want to see someone kick his ass. No, he's just... I don't know. He's like trying to play a wrestler. I don't know what it is about The Miz and that character. I mean, no doubt about it. Like he can talk, he can cut a good promo, but I don't feel anything for him. I don't, because he's been the same guy. He hasn't evolved. There's been almost zero evolution of The Miz character. Yeah, he's been babyface, and we saw that he tried to protect his family from The Fiend, but the fans didn't really accept him as a babyface. He did his program with Daniel Bryan. There's been some, you know, not that the whole thing hasn't been a dumpster fire for Miz. He just is extremely stale. They haven't done anything with him. Or The Miz himself has just kind of become complacent. It's a complacent character. There's nothing there that draws me to that character to feel anything other than just kind of sigh when he comes out. When I hear awesome, I go, I literally just kind of what I did with Elias. I'm like, and I'm not asking for constant change. But when you have years and years and years of the same character and no progression, don't even worry about Elias. Elias is, you know, small on this scale here compared to The Miz's character. I don't know. And I think John Morrison should break out on his own. I mean, I don't see a need for this tag team other than just keeping them together as a team because they have chemistry and they're really low on tag teams to begin with. The inventory of tag teams is extremely low. So I don't see them breaking up. But I just, anybody else kind of see The Miz, and it's not heel heat. It's not like, ooh, I'm going to pay to see someone whoop his ass. It's just you go, oh, it's almost channel changing. It really is. That's not good. That's not good. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of in a very blah mood. Who knows? Okay. What else did I see tonight? Matt Riddle and Sheamus. I mean, really good match for both guys. Did you expect anything less? Did you really expect anything less? I mean, I didn't. Sheamus got a bro kick for the win to earn his spot on the team for the Survivor Series men's side. So that was also really good. It made sense. I don't think Matt Riddle's ready for that spotlight yet. Sheamus is kind of the grizzled vet, and that made total sense for me. Okay, so let's run down the other things that were announced on Raw, which was, again, Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. We went over that. Team Raw on the women's side and Team SmackDown on the women's side. Bobby Lashley versus Sami Zayn, the U.S. champion versus the Intercontinental champion. Heel versus heel. I don't think that's a problem. I think if this was in person, people would be cheering for Sami Zayn. I don't think there's any question about it. He's kind of that, he's the annoying, smarmy heel. He gets under your skin, but he's so damn good that you, but if he was against Bobby Lashley and the fans are forced to choose, guess what they're going to do? They're going to cheer for Sami Zayn. So let's all pretend. I'll be interested to see what WWE does with their crowd noise that they pump in. I will say that. Very interested to hear what they do with that crowd noise to see who they feel should be the babyface and heel in that. And honestly, this whole crowd pumping in noise that they've done in post-production, it's a nice insight into what they think the crowd should be doing at every point during the match. Isn't it? It's interesting to see who they feel that you should be cheering, booing, and what chants should be throughout the show. It's just a introspective look into the minds of creative and Vince, of what they, production team rather, that they think we should be doing. Like nice little good fans. Asuka versus Sasha Banks. I mean, it's babyface. I'm fine with this. I have no problem. You know it's going to be a good match. Again, the consequences are minimal. There's no championship on the line. Just as I mean, is there going to be any championship on the line at all at Survivor Series? Yeah, the answer is no. But my God, we've got something even better on the line. That's bragging rights. Brand supremacy. I mean, that's what we're going to be sold. That is the bill of gold, bill of goods that we are all going to be sold over the next 3 weeks by Raw and SmackDown commentators that were supposed to care about the brand supremacy nonsense. Although I don't want to get into that. I did for the beginning of the show. It's just preposterous. I mean, with trying to be PG here on my PG show, you can think of some other very creative language for what I really think about this whole thing, which just infuriates me because you know what? It's an exposure of the business at the highest level. It's an exposure of the business at the highest level. When you drop feuds that are going on, that are intense, they're personal, for people to just team up because, well, management says so and because, well, they care about their brand. They care about their color. Why would they care about their brand or color? They were just drafted there by choice. They didn't have a say in it. They didn't go there because they loved it. They just went there because they were told to. And now they're supposed to fight for the brand that they're on because they were drafted by that brand. It's so stupid. And then these people are teaming up, I mean, hanging backstage because, well, we're a team. We need to figure out who's going to do what. And I'm the team captain. No, you're the team captain. It's so sophomoric. Okay, I'm gonna stop there. But anyway, guys, I think I will end it there as we're a little past the hour mark here. But tomorrow, Wrestling Nostalgia, Undertaker, Randy Orton. I've got some good stuff. I got some good audio, and I will even pump in some audio from the Untold documentary series or documentary that they did with this particular rivalry and hear from Randy Orton and Undertaker about what they thought about in certain moments and everything else. Very well done. And I remember this rivalry well. Some things I did forget, but it was great. And hearing from Randy and Taker about this program was just brilliant. So I'll pump in some of that. And we get to relive some of their moments. So I think it's going to be fun tomorrow night. Thursday is your NXT review. And if you've come this far, well, and you're interested in doing an AEW review show for us, and you have at least a high-quality mic, you love wrestling, you love AEW, and you have been watching AEW, not that I don't want somebody who's just starting to watch AEW to cover AEW. I want somebody who's loves that product to be able to cover it for the show on a weekly basis, sending me your review and thoughts via audio. Hit me up, realwwepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter, wrestling_audio, or on Instagram at wwe_podcast, and we're on YouTube. I haven't posted a video in a while. Maybe I'll do that tomorrow too. So Guys, thank you so much. As always, give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, or head on over to Patreon if you want an ad-free experience. So, all right, everyone, that's it for me. As always, I'll talk to you next time.